Hey folks, welcome into On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. You like that intro music? We've been getting some, our producer Michael has gotten some plaudits for his choice of intro music. It changed a few episodes ago, as I understand. So there you go. There's some dap for Michael. I am Brett Taylor. That is Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. We are here to talk all things Cubs. The 5-9 Cubs after a series split in Colorado. I think
5-4, no, Brett.
What did I say?
Jesus, you just predicted a 5-game losing streak. If that happens, fans are going to be upset.
Wait, what did I say?
you said five and nine.
Oh, I guess I was it was like, yeah, 5-9.
Yeah, yeah. But, I got what you were saying.
That is not good. If they get swept by the Rays and then lose a couple later this week, it's going to be like, Brett did this. Okay, 5-4. The 5-4 Chicago Cubs, who will never be 5-9 ever again. That will never occur. Just like the very high level stuff from that Rockies series. We'll get into some more of the specifics, but I think I want to say we said this on Thursday's episode that if the Cubs could split, you'd be perfectly content with that because it's just the Rockies are so, so difficult and have been for a decade. No matter how good or bad their team is overall, it's very hard to go to Colorado and win. And, so going 2-2, good, fine, great, perfectly happy with that. And then the other high-level thing is, other than that first day where there was sort of the pseudo press conference to reignite any discussions with Chris Bryant, that was not really a storyline for the series. You know, he had a couple hits. That didn't become a story, and that actually ended up striking me as nice that it was just like he was just another dude on the Rockies. So yeah, comment, respond to any of that, and then we'll dig in on some of the particulars that we want to talk about.
Yeah, no, I mean, in general, it was you could see some missed opportunities in the series, sure, but you know, you go to Colorado, you split, it's really hard to win games there. So you take that. This so far so good with this season, I would say, in nothing glaringly bad where you're like, well, this just isn't going to work. But there are some nice positives that you can build off of going forward. I don't know, I don't want to get too far ahead of things and suggest that, hey, this is going to be a much better season than some people expected, but there definitely are some aspects of this team that you look at. And even if you're one of those people that are like, this is not a year where they're going to realistically contend, you can see pieces, especially on offense, where you're like, this is going to work out as long as they put a few more bring in the right pieces to supplement the group, maybe a superstar and one more star piece or whatever it is. I know it's 9 games in, but I you can just see the baseline for, okay, there's a competent offense already, and if you bring in a couple more pieces, maybe just one or two, or you get the right development in the minor league, this could be a really good offense.
I just felt like that Coors Field series kind of mirrored just this young season overall. Like, it hasn't been a total disaster. There are some encouraging signs, some obvious issues. And I think, you know, especially a team in this position, like, that matters, like, just kind of treading water, given the total lack of outside expectations and the complete lack of urgency on the ownership front office level, like, just showing some baseline competencies in certain areas and having, you know, a potential star hitter in, say, a Suzuki in the middle of that lineup, like, that makes that's not nothing. And I think, you know, we've certainly seen what Seiya can do, and I think that's legitimate and impactful and meaningful down the road. I think the rest of the group, though, by and large, the fact that they have like almost no track record, really kind of, I'm in kind of more of a wait and see mode to see where this thing goes and what these guys can do and if they can handle a full season, much less be difference makers collectively over the course of 162.
I want to respond to some of that, but also I want to say that to any of the listeners who, if there's funky sound coming from Patrick, it is because he decided to proceed sans Mike today. Do you like that I said decided? As though you were like, you know what? No, I'm just not going to use a mic today.
The IT department in my son's bedroom is not very good. You know, there's no genius button here. I got a sweet NBA Superstars poster where almost every player is now on a new team, like Kyrie in a Boston jersey, Durant in a Warriors, James Harden in Rockets, you know, on and on and on. So that's kind of what I'm staring at right now, this world, what I'm working with here.
At least no Bulls on that poster, I gather.
No, I mean, we got Kawhi Leonard in a Raptors jersey. That's kind of how we're dating things here. But that's kind of how up to date the systems are.
And, yeah.
Where I'm currently working from.
The tin can recording system. So I agree with everything you guys have said with respect to that balance of being intrigued by some of the things that we're seeing from this team, but not. You can't change your perspective on what this team is likely to be this year in terms of the results, you know, the wins and losses. I think we would all say we're still kind of thinking it's going to be that range of where July is more likely to be a selling oriented month than a buying one. But I do think one, you know, and we talked about this. We did back when the Cubs were signing him, but the tricky thing about talking about the offense, which is what we're going to transition to now as a whole, is it's fundamentally different if Seiya Suzuki is the guy he's shown that he has been already, or if he does still have to go through an adjustment period where, you know, okay, so he's not going to chase. I think teams are going to get that pretty quick, that he's not going to just go after everything. Unless maybe you execute certain things in a certain way that they're going to pick up on, because teams are exceptionally quick nowadays at adjusting and finding whatever little issue that you might have in your approach or your swing, and they will exploit it until you fix it. And so I want to be careful in, you know, heck, I was tweeting about it this morning. I was just joking. Cubs have the best OPS in baseball. They have the highest on-base percentage in baseball. Their weighted runs created plus, which is park adjusted, because I can already hear you all saying, oh, Coors Field. They're second best in baseball, even if you park adjust. So the Cubs have performed through these nine games like a top-of-the-league offense. But so much of that is buoyed by Seiya's ungodly performance so far. And so that isn't going to last. We know it at this level. It's not going to last. But if he is a star at the plate, it does on its own. Baseball is not one of these sports where one player can dramatically transform the picture for a team, but it can really move the needle on an offense like this where you have a lot of competent. I think one of you guys used the word competent. That's a good word for a lot of the guys in this offense. Just competent, solid. It, you know, not going to fundamentally change the shape of the offense on their own, but like can move the line, can keep things going and come to the plate. And you're not like, oh shit, now it's this guy. And if you add Suzuki to that mix, if he's a star caliber performer, that could leave you at the end of the year with a slightly above average offense overall, especially if the Cubs continue to figure out these rotations and the platoons and optimize them in a way that works. And so that's my reaction when I think about the offense so far, is I enjoy watching it. I have enjoyed watching it quite a bit more than some of the years past, but I'm cautioning myself, because I'm like, okay, but the total production, if Seiya isn't, you know, Mike Trout times two, okay, well then some of the production is going to go down.
Right. Well, it is fun to watch Seiya start off this season the way he has and wonder just how good he is, right? The numbers will come back down to earth. He's not going to be this insane player that nobody's ever put up numbers like, but he's doing the things that teams look for when they talk about offensive superstars so far, right? He doesn't chase, he doesn't swing and miss, and he barrels up the ball when he does make contact. Those three things are what the best of the best do. He's doing it so far.
By the way, by far the best barrel rate on contact in baseball.
Yeah, it's like he's proving to be so far a really good player. Let's see where it is 2 months from now, 3 months from now. There has to be some sort of adjustment period coming. But, you know, he doesn't seem like the type of guy that's going to go up there and overthink it. You know, if he is a superstar, that is, I mean, just going forward, beyond what this team can be this year, that contract then becomes a steal, right? Then you talk about what the Cubs can do going forward, and suddenly Jed Hoyer is going to feel a lot more comfortable adding a, you know, much bigger contract or two at some point when he's ready to pounce. That's something we can discuss down the line if this continues to look the way it is with him. But it's something you said, Brett, I think you said it's just been a lot easier to watch or more fun to watch. These games aren't any shorter than what we've been watching over the years. So much easier to digest. And I'm not sure if people have blocked out last April from their memories, but that was some of the worst offensive baseball I have ever watched in my life. Like, it was god-awful with superstars up and down the lineup, and it was unbearable to watch. And this team, one guy that's playing like a star, Wilson is playing pretty close to star level, probably is playing, if I look at his numbers, it's probably star level performance on offense. So you have a couple guys playing like stars, but even, I know there's a lot of ground outs, I know there's a lot of grounded into double plays, I'll take that over 20 strikeouts a game any day of the week, even if it means more home runs. It was really rough to watch last April. This is more easy to watch, even if the games are just as long. It's more. It's a better brand of baseball, and I know it's what we kind of expected coming into the season, but actually seeing it is refreshing. I think there are aspects that will change. I wrote a little bit about the ground ball issues. I think Sunday was the perfect example of what this team can be. You know, Wilson and Seiya hitting home runs, other guys hitting doubles, other guys, just everyone else just putting the ball in play. And that could mean a lot of guys left on base, but it should mean 4, 5, 6 runs. And that's great. You'll take that if you can get even decent pitching. But it's a much more fun offense to watch when you're just putting the ball in play regularly. Learn to elevate the ball. That's something I really liked hearing from Greg Brown. They're not accepting these players for who they are right now. Big league development is a priority. So a guy like Nick Madrigal or Nico Horner, just because you think they're singles hitters, they're not accepting that. They're going to continue to work with them. It's a process. It's something he brought up specifically, Francisco Lindor, and I looked it up, and it really is fascinating how they changed the type of offensive player in Cleveland that Francisco Lindor was, and kind of the launch angle shifted dramatically over the course of from 16 to 18, and he just became a different offensive profile. And that was a guy that was thought of as like a singles hitter when he was in the minors. So these things can change.
Nick Madrigal is the next Francisco Lindor?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
That's awesome.
Or Nico is.
Well, Nico is the next. I'm trying to think. Max Muncy.
I thought it was crazy too, because like Cleveland's reputation for developing hitters is just about as bad as the Cubs' reputation for developing pitchers. So there's probably something to be taken away from that. If there are, we've heard Jed and Theo before that hammer that point home of like development shouldn't stop at the major league level, and it kind of felt like it did stop at Wrigley Field to a certain extent. And yeah, I think with Seiya too, you know, Brett, I mean, when you include the posting fee, it was roughly $100 million investment, right, in Seiya. So like your stars just need to be stars, and I totally agree there's going to be adjustment period, there's going to be times where he looks out of it, but like he's 27 years old, he's a baseball prodigy. This is not the Cubs hoping for some failed first round pick to catch lightning in a bottle. Like this guy is, you know, almost like his own corporation. He has his own camp. He's been a professional for a very long time. He's been under a microscope for a long time. And I think, you know, this is kind of more validation probably from their end than like this like totally amazing new discovery.
Well, and certainly the skills that he's showing off are the kind that you would most want to see early in that transition period. You would want to see the discipline. You would want to see him not chasing. You would want to see him not swinging and missing. And you would want to see him hitting the ball hard. I mean, that's whatever the results were. Those would be the things you would be looking at first to say at sort of a baseline level, okay, this is a guy who handles himself very well at the plate. So, yeah, I got to believe the Cubs are like just over the moon so far with how that has looked. And I think the comments about developing at the big league level will continue to be important, not just for the younger guys who we think still probably have some of that room to add a little bit of power, for example, with the Nico and Nick, but some of those older guys. And by that, I don't mean the Cubs are going to develop Frank Schwindel or Patrick Wisdom into superstars from where they are. It's almost like development for those guys at their level is being able to translate that early success into something sustainable for several years. And I think it was very interesting in that respect to see and hear from Patrick Wisdom during this Rockies series, where nobody had started their season worse than Wisdom. I mean, just the strikeouts were at or above the level that they were last year. The hard contact wasn't there. And, you know, it's not a long period of time. You know, we always talk about the start of the season. You know, you look at a week in a random week in June and you barely notice when a guy is like having a terrible week. But if it's the start of the season, everybody notices. And that includes the players. And so I really appreciate it. I think I read some of his comments in the Tribune where he admitted, it's like, of course it gets in your head. Of course you notice. Of course you see, well, I tried to make some, you know, swing changes this offseason and my results have been terrible for a week. And the way you address that is you just have to convince yourself, no, I have the right plan. There was a reason that this was done. I'm not going to be Mike Trout up there. I'm not going to be Vlad Guerrero up there. I just have to be the best Patrick Wisdom I can be. And that means sticking to whatever the plan was that should get me there. And obviously, you know, it's not always like a one-to-one light switch flipping from like terrible start to all universe for three games. Like every single ball he hit was well struck and
right.
He was not striking out and et cetera, et cetera. So it's not to say that that will happen for everyone, because everyone likes to stick to their plan and all that. But it was certainly heartening to see and be reminded, yeah, there is a possibility for some of these older guys that they may indeed be able to find their footing and be useful contributors for this Cubs team for this and next year. And then you sort of see what happens after that as some of the younger guys come up. But I found that it's another one where I try not to go too far with it, but I found that to be just a nice thing from this series and a reminder of what could happen.
Yeah, and it was nice to see that those weren't, you know, Coors Field cheapies, right? He's ripping line drives in the gap, and a lot of what the Cubs did, I'd say, outside of two of the home runs, right? Like Sayas was kind of a fly ball that barely went out, and same with Schwindel's. I don't know. I didn't look at the numbers on those. Those may have been like off the wall in most other places. I don't know. I didn't look at what they may have been, but they were lining the ball all over the place for much of that series. One other guy who I thought left that series, it was a really positive Sunday, was Nico. Seeing him get the ball up in the air and hit it hard, because we know he can hit it hard. Like that was something that struck the scouts and the R&D department when they were during that draft, whatever it was, 18 draft to 17 draft, whatever it was, that stood out to both the scouts and what they saw with their eyes and the R&D staff with what they saw with the data. This guy can hit the ball hard. If we can teach him to hit it in the air, he's going to be a valuable major leaguer. I thought there was too much on the ground from him and just not enough getting the ball in the air early on outside of the home run to start the season. And that's just going to, you're relying on luck then. Then you're just a pure luck hitter. You end up, like what Albert Almora did that one first half where he was hitting 300, and it was just like, this isn't going to work. Like, you can't pound the ball into the ground and hope to find holes every other day. It just doesn't work that way. You start doing what Nico did on Sunday, and that's a much different player. I don't expect him to hit many more home runs like he did on opening day, but if he's a gap-to-gap guy, finding the gaps, hitting it on a line, and playing the type of defense that he's been playing, and I think all three of us were I don't want to speak for the rest of you, but I know I was down on his defense, and I was like, this guy can't play shorts up every day. Been 9 games. So I don't know if he can handle it over the course of a full season. He needs to stay healthy. He needs to prove all that stuff to us. But his arm looks so much better than what I remember it being. And I know he's worked his butt off. I know he's not the type of guy that, you know, is just going to rely on his pure natural skills. He's going to put in the work to try and get better at whatever people suggest his failings may be, and he's impressed me and quieted me on that in that area so far. So I, that's along with wisdom. I thought Nico, the end of that series, I was like, okay, that's the Nico that the Cubs need, because as good as Seiya's been and as good as the offense has looked overall, there are some guys that you're like, these guys need to either, you know, they need some balls to drop, or they need to just, it needs to look different for this to actually work. And I thought Nico was one of those guys.
I understand the skepticism about, you know, wisdom and Schwindel and the overall roster construction. I get that as players, they naturally will have second thoughts and some doubts creep in, but I don't know. The Cubs did not show like any interest in bringing back Anthony Rizzo or Chris Bryant. Like, they want to see what they have in these guys, right or wrong. And I don't know when kind of the point would be where they will have seen enough to make an evaluation, but I don't think we're anywhere close to that. I mean, if you don't like Frank Schwindel, like, who's going to play first base every day? Like, they're not ton of great out. They just optioned out Rivas.
Patrick, you didn't have to tweet about optioning Rivas and see the reaction to it. So the Cubs Twitter reacted like they demoted like the second coming, the greatest baseball player ever. He had 4 plate appearances, I believe, all season, and they acted like they how could you demote this guy?
Excellent plate appearances, Sahade.
The reaction I was stunned. I was just like, I'm just going to tweet out the transactions here, and people
I wasn't apoplectic or anything, but the only reason I had a pretty soft reaction to it was mostly because when rosters shrink, like, there's just not going to be, the Cubs are going to have to make some tougher decisions. And so I'm sort of defaulting to everybody with options left is probably going to see some time at Iowa this year. So that, you know, that doesn't bother me as much, but to Patrick's point, yeah, you want to make sure you're giving plenty of runway to Frank Schwindel, again, ditto Patrick Wisdom, because otherwise what's the point? You know, nothing the Cubs did in the offseason was dissonant with just going for it, being like, okay, maybe we have a guy. Let's, you know, because we know that this year was always going to be like a questionable year in terms of competitiveness. So if priority one is knowing what you have internally and developing internally for 2023 and beyond, then you would just be crazy to not give at least 3 months or whatever to these guys to just be like, okay, let's see how it is. And so again, that's why I also understand the Rivas decision. Although I love that guy. I mean, I know why fans gravitate to him, because I think he reminds them of a Mark Grace type hitter at first base. Not a ton of power, gap to gap guy, puts the ball in play, has a very sophisticated plate appearance about him, like just quality understanding of the zone, plays good defense at first. So I think I just have a sense, and I'm not saying this is me, but that fans have an unspoken reason why they just sort of are like, oh, that's an interesting first baseman right there. I think they don't realize what it is that's tugging on them that makes them think that, but that's just a just a sense. And he is a decent, I mean, he's a good player to have on a team.
He puts together really good at bats. And I know Ross loves those at bats, and he'll be back. Don't worry about it, guys. He's not going. I mean, he's going somewhere to AAA, but he's not he's not going too far. He'll be back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Side note on that, if you want to get even nerdier, the other part of that option that I was like, oh, is I'm like, well, what about Jared Young, man? He needs to keep getting those plate appearances at Iowa. Keep an eye on that one, folks. There's a deep cut. He is raking right now. Anyway, all right, Patrick, this was quite a digression from your overall point. We can keep going on Rivas if you want, but I leave that to you.
No, yeah, I'm trying to. You summed up my overall point really well. I'm just, you know, kind of. You surprised me a couple episodes ago with that whole parting shots, parting thoughts thing. So I'm not sure, like, how much do I need to keep in reserve?
Yeah, you better hold some back. Hold it back, because we're getting close. We're getting close to the final whip
around. Looking at the counter right now, I'm like, all right.
Yep, you know. All right. I should have, like, some kind of sound signal that's like, okay, here we are. We're in the final, Well, maybe we'll talk to Michael about that. So you're up now. Sadef, boom. Just like that.
Yeah, Patrick. No, I would say my parting shots are just like, I like the way this offense is looking, and I think it's interesting that three of the four losses have been Hendricks and Stroman starts. Those are two guys that are so reliant on mechanics and command. I talked to both of them about their starts, their recent poor outings, and it's mechanics. Stroman seems very chill about it. I think he's a guy that's all about feel and how his body feels. And he said he knew right away when he was out there something wasn't right. I know he and Ross both said those first three innings he looked good. I didn't feel that way. I thought I need to get to know his pitching style a little bit better. I'd like to know exactly what it looks like when it's locked in. But I'd be surprised if he leaves balls up in the zone that much when he's having success. Yeah. I don't
almost
think that's
everything.
What it looks like.
Almost everything was belt high in that
right.
Those first three innings.
Unless it's like pure late movement that he relies on and he can get away with that consistently, which is possible. I haven't dug into enough of what he did in the past to have. I mean, I know he's a ground ball guy and not a bat misser, but. Where exactly he gets that soft contact, I have to assume it's down and below the zone, and he just wasn't there at all on whatever day that was, Friday or Saturday, whatever day it was. But I'm watching both him and Hendricks closely because they're so reliant on their mechanics and so reliant on command that even if something slightly goes off, it'll be a rough day for them. So I trust they'll both get back on track. Hendricks's opening day gave me some comfort that this guy's not like on some downward trajectory that, you know, you can't find it, and talked about to them, and they're working on things, and they trust they'll lock it back in. So that's just what I'm watching this week when those guys get their next outings.
Totally unrelated topic, but one of the moments or sequences that needs to be in the 2022 One Shining Moment montage, Joe Maddon walking Seager with the bases loaded. And then, as Brett said on Twitter, Joe Maddon gave a most Joe Maddon explanation to it, chalking it up to the human element and trying to spark the group. And I was just absolutely loving it. It was just like peak Joe Maddon. And, you know, Jesse Rogers, our friend, you know, we still like quote Joe Maddon in the press box and Sahadev too, like all of us, but Jesse's who I sit next to. And we always, you know, during the pandemic, we joke about how we kind of missed some of Joe's idiosyncrasies even more, like how soothing it was when he'd start talking about his day of, you know, went for, hit up the steam room for about an hour, went for a bike ride, you know, Uber Eats. Like, he would just like had this way about him that was calming and refreshing and entertaining. And just seeing that go off on Twitter and Mike Trout's reaction, I don't know if that actually was his reaction or just like a gift someone kind of like recycled.
This is totally it was his awesome. Reaction.
Yeah, it was the camera, they went to him right as that was happening. And you can see he's like calculating. He's like, wait, but the faces
literally
are
counting
loaded.
In his head. I scrolled past that probably like a dozen times in the press box. And like all the other writers sitting next to me just were so delighted at how every single time I saw it, I still cracked up the same. Like, I couldn't stop laughing. Every single time it popped up, I just like burst out laughing because that was so great. His reaction. I still, just thinking about it, I can't help but laugh. It was so perfect.
And the outcome was just the most perfect Joe Maddon outcome too, where in the moment it did not work at all because two more runs scored after the intentional walk. It was terrible, terrible decision. And then of course the Angels came back and won and won handily, so that, as Patrick alluded to, he could say after the game, well, you know, I wanted to shake him up. I wanted to see if it would spark something, and clearly it did. He didn't say that, but the implication was, and clearly it worked. Do you see? Do you see that? And I'm not even trying to give Joe Maddon too much shit, because I think I said this too, 99% of the time, Joe Maddon, he makes great decisions, and his weirdness at the human level works. It clearly does unlock guys in a way that helps. So I'm not trying to make fun too much, but it was so perfectly Joe Maddon. All of that was that. Yes, it was nice to get. You know, we don't get that anymore on a daily basis with the Cubs. For all the things that David Ross is, and I appreciate about David Ross, he's not quite Joe Maddon in terms of providing content for us to devour as consumers of baseball. So get on that, Manager David, by the way. Can you bring like a petting zoo to the ballpark or something, or, you know, pinch hit with Kyle Hendricks sometime, maybe just to spark things. So Tampa Bay Rays coming to Wrigley Field, speaking of old Joe Maddon haunts, and the Cubs will get a look at some more quality young pitching. And a look at a bullpen that they, you know, will continue to try to emulate in the years ahead. And then I think, like Sahadev said, I am looking forward to seeing Kyle Hendricks, see if he bounces back. Same with Marcus Stroman. And I am enjoying, and my parting shot, I guess, is just that I am enjoying watching the bullpen get sorted out. I know that it is very painful for some fans to not remember that this is how it is every April with what the Cubs do. Is just, there's going to be some good and bad in the process. And I just enjoy it. I enjoy seeing the logic of like, oh, he's trying this guy out in this type of situation now. And I just enjoy that dance. So I will look forward to continuing to see that this week. And we will be back at you on Thursday. This is On to Waveland, Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor. Get my stuff at Bleacher Nation. Patrick Mooney, Sahadev Sharma, get theirs at The Athletic. We appreciate you so much. Take care. Have a great week. Stay warm. Stay out of the snow. You know, that normal mid-April snow that we get every year. Just totally, totally normal stuff. Take care.